This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Last week, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics released data that shows that employment rose by 336,000 jobs in the last month, nearly doubling economists' expectations. But why? And what does that mean for the economy and for efforts to lower inflation? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you one of those jobs? Did you get one of those jobs just added to the workforce? Did you leave maybe an early retirement to come back into the workforce at some point? What questions do you have about the strength of the labor market, about inflation, and more? And here's a very specific question. Did you leave the workforce between the ages of 54 and 65-ish? Love to hear your story. You'll find out why. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Kevin Barr is Professor Emeritus and Chief Analyst at the Century School of Business and Economics at UW-Stevens Point. Kevin, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, thank you very much. Thanks for having me back.
Let's start with last month's numbers. Now, asterisk, these things can be revised upward or downward in the months to come. But that said, I think these are pretty good employment numbers, right?
That was a very strong month. It was unexpectedly high. It was the strongest growth in jobs since January of this year. There had been an expectation that the job market was still growing, but that it was cooling off. But instead, you had this rather substantial kick up in jobs and also a kick up in job openings. So we now have 156.8 million Americans employed. That's the highest total ever in the history of the United States. And that is up about 27 million from the COVID low back in April 2020. So, the job market really is sort of like been the kind of the shining point in this whole economic recovery.
I'm assuming there are a lot of different possible answers to this question, but do we know why the job market continues to look pretty good?
I think the number one reason is that consumer spending has just been really, really strong. If you go back to the third quarter of 2020, personal consumption spending, and this is accounts for two-thirds of GDP, this has continued to grow in every quarter despite the ramping up of interest rates by the Federal Reserve. If you look back ever since the Fed started kicking up interest rates at the beginning of last year, investment spending has been up and down both by businesses and in the residential construction market, but kind of the common factor since the third quarter of 2020 and the driving factor, it accounts for two-thirds of American economic growth, has been consumption spending.
One of the big questions has been, okay, the Federal Reserve has been bumping up and bumping up interest rates over months and months now, hoping to rein in inflation. The thought was, okay, at some point that's going to slow the economy down and job growth is going to slow down along with it. Why does that not seem to be happening?
Well, you have a couple of things going on. First, I think with the whole inflation thing, I do think it's important to realize that the bulk of the inflation that the United States had and the rest of the world, I mean, inflation was incredibly high around the world. It was over 10% in the euro area, 11% in the United Kingdom, almost 9% in Mexico, 8% in Canada and Australia. A lot of that was really kind of international factors related to the war in Ukraine, specifically energy prices because oil prices spiked, also food prices because commodity prices, particularly wheat spiked. And then you had Russia being the number one supplier of agricultural fertilizers, so those prices spiked. So the whole ratcheting up of interest rates, I mean, it is supposed to kind of cut back overall demand. But you saw a huge drop of inflation around the world. Basically, inflation dropped by over half just when oil prices moderated to some extent, food prices moderated. So that really kind of drove down the inflation. Okay, so now you have this jacking up of interest rates by central banks around the world because, well, that's what they can do. And it has affected investment spending. So inflation has been coming down, but it still has not really affected consumer spending too much because of the strong labor market. And I think that's kind of a combination of there's this kind of pent up strength of the labor market that's been going on for a long time. Also, really not last year, but before last year, the financial markets were doing pretty good. So again, it's basically been consumer spending driving everything.
Talking to Kevin Barr from UW-Stevens Point, economist there. We're looking at the latest monthly job numbers, substantially higher than expected in the U.S. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your theories as to why that might be, your questions for our guest. And we're about to talk about labor force participation. Love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you are over, say, 54, have you thought about or did you leave the job market maybe earlier than planned? If you are working age but under 25, same question at the opposite end. Has it been easy for you to find a job? Have you entered the job market yet? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Kevin, you know what's coming. I sent you a couple charts I wanted to ask about earlier today. I'm always fascinated. Yep. There's the big chart, labor force participation, how many working age people are actually working, and that's gone down a lot over time. But then I saw another chart, prime age, age 25 to 54, I think is the range. That's held really steady and been really high for a long time. So what's the story?
Okay, so overall, labor force participation has actually increased in the last year. If you go back to September of 2022, it was about 61.8%. Now it's up to 62.8%. So that increased labor force participation has helped the job growth, because the unemployment rate in the United States has actually gone up since earlier this year. It was down about 3.4, now we're 3.8. So, okay, how can you have job growth, but the unemployment rate still goes up? And the answer is, well, because you have more people looking for jobs. You bring up an interesting point, though. What's really kind of driven this increased labor force participation, if you look at the ages, the age group 25 to 54 has really driven this. You go back a year, that age group participation rate was 82.6. Now it's at 83.5. If you look at workers age 55 and older, that's held pretty constant post-COVID at about 38%. Pre-COVID, it held pretty constant at around 40%. If you want to look at long-term trends, yeah, the age group 16 to 24 is where you really see the drop-off in labor force participation. That's really kind of been the big drop off. It's come back a little bit as the job market's heated up, but still, if you look at comparisons kind of in a long run perspective, if you will, if you go back to the 70s through the 90s, the age group 16 through 19, the labor force participation rate was over 50%. Now it's down to 36.5%. If you look at the age group 20 to 24, again, between 1980 and 2000, that labor force participation was about 70, was greater than 75%. And now it's kind of holding between about 70 and 71%.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Lisa is with us in Potosi. Lisa, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I am wondering, with this increase in jobs recently, how much of that is attributed to the Biden infrastructure package that came through, and whether or not that directly relates to the increased consumer spending?
Lisa, thanks a lot for the call. Any connection between the infrastructure spending and the Inflation Reduction Act and all of the federal packages post-COVID, Kevin, and our willingness as consumers to keep spending money?
I think overall, the government stimulus programs that were put in place post-COVID just helps the overall economy and get people back to work. And then there's kind of like a snowball effect. If you're providing people with whatever stimulus checks or you have new programs being rolled out, that pumps more money into the economy, that enhances overall spending, then that gets more people back to work in other industries. The recent job growth, and for the most part, the job growth this year has been fairly broad across various industries. Most recently, leisure and hospitality has been kind of leading the way, but the job growth overall has been pretty broad in various industries. But no doubt, the government stimulus programs in whatever form that kickstarted the economy, got the ball rolling, to create the overall economic recovery.
Got an email from Matt in Madison who writes, please explain to me slowly like I'm a young child. So I just got back from the grocery store and a box of Bran Flakes is $6. So not only do we get inflation, we also get mortgages at 7.5%, raising interest rates, funneled money directly up. Consumer price gouging is unfettered, Matt writes. They'll charge what they can, and COVID set the pricing. Now, Matt, Kevin, chose a product line that I pay very close attention to. I eat a lot of breakfast cereal. He is right. Prices, like, bumped up, and they locked in. Is there some element of price gouging? Hey, Rob and Matt, they found out, are willing to pay extra for this box of cereal. We're not going to bring the price back down.
Well, in 2022, both corporate profits and corporate profit margins, and the profit margin would basically give you an indication if prices went up to a greater extent and the cost went up for the corporations. Those were at record levels. Now, not every company had record profits. Not every company had a record profit margin. But profit margins were at 70-year highs back in 2022. They've come down a little bit this year. But generally speaking, the price to the consumer went up more than the cost to the business for actually supplying or for producing the product. And that wasn't always directly related to because, well, we have less product to sell, so we have to jack up the price of what we do have. But corporate profits and profit margins were at record levels last year, come down a little bit this year, but there's definitely some truth to that.
Thanks a lot for that email. We are talking to Kevin Barr, Professor Emeritus and Chief Analyst at the Century School of Business and Economics at UW-Stevens Point, breaking down new data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that shows surprisingly strong job numbers for the last month. You can join in with your thoughts or questions about the economy, maybe your experiences or those of a family member on the job market or as an employer. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Kevin Barr, Professor Emeritus, Chief Analyst at the Century School of Business and Economics at UW-Stevens Point, looking at strong job numbers from last month, wider stories about the economy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Mark is with us in Madison. Mark, hi.
Hi. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear. What did you want to talk about, Mark?
My children are young adults, and they have been struggling to find jobs where they can just get a full-time job. Everybody only wants to hire part-time, maybe 2 or 3 days a week, and then they're trying to juggle 2 or 3 jobs on all these different schedules, and they can't go and just work 40 hours a week like I did when I first got my job in the 80s. So that's a huge problem, and I think it's deterring a lot of young people from trying to find work. And another issue I've been hearing from friends in HR is a lot of the automated screening tools are screening out applicants, so they're not even being reviewed to be hired, and they're losing a lot of applicants that might be good fits, but they're being screened out.
Mark, interesting. Good luck to your kids, by the way, your 20-something kids. Kevin, this idea that young people are having trouble finding anything but part-time work, is that something that's going to show up in our federal statistics?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the part-time jobs will be in there if you're actually looking and you're employed. But he brings up a good point. It's not going to show up as far as, hey, I was looking for full-time work. Or let's put it like this. If you're underemployed, that's not going to be reflected in the employment statistics. So if I don't have the job that I think I'm qualified for, but you're still employed, where you're still going to count as being employed. But I think Mark does raise some really good issues. You might be unemployed. You might not be able to get the job that provides you with the benefits that you want. And in addition to that, I think there are definitely some challenges where you have to navigate applying for jobs nowadays, because you can be sort of your resume now can be electronically tossed just as easy as in the old days when they could toss your paper form of your resume away. So it's a challenge. I mean, there might be some keywords that you don't have that they're looking for, and consequently you really don't get considered for a job that you definitely could be qualified for.
Thanks a lot for that call. John joins us now in Appleton. John, hello.
Hey, I'm actually one of those over 55s who's left the workforce at 55 5 years ago. And ironically, it was, it was a voluntary retirement package, but it's kind of strange that things were not tight 5 years ago, and now it sounds like they're extremely tight. So I don't know if your guest has any thoughts about the fluctuations. Well, like that.
John, before you hang up, I want to ask, do you ever think about going back into the job market, part-time or full-time?
I certainly consider it, and I do some gig work, but I would not consider it employment in any way. Frankly, more volunteer and those types of activities.
John, thanks a lot for the call and for putting a voice to some of these big statistics we're talking about. Kevin, people retiring at 55. Now, there was concern, I think, that people in that age range, especially with COVID, saying, oh, wow, am I putting my health at risk? They might nudge, as John did back in 2018, they might bump out of the workforce a little bit earlier. Have we seen that?
I think that's definitely true. I think there was also, and I personally know people that bail out of the healthcare industry just because of the pressure that was going on, the pressure and then the stress that you were under kind of during the COVID time. And it's kind of like once you step away from the workforce, well, do you really want to go back? And the numbers would say kind of, that the drop in the labor participation force rate, that has stayed relatively, it's not exactly fully constant, but it's pretty much been around 38% for the 55 and above. So there certainly has not been a flood back into the workforce by that age group. Again, it's 38% now. It was 40% before COVID. And so I think COVID had some pressures and some strains in certain industries that kind of had or really encouraged people to retire early, and they didn't want to come back afterward.
John, thanks for the call. Marcus is with us now in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Good afternoon, Rob. So I guess I'm wondering, is there some sort of metric that they have looking at the quality of the job? Because having, a part-time or several jobs where you are, making hamburgers or something, and it is not the same as having a long-time or a long-term career. And so I guess, how do they track that?
Marcus, thanks for the call. Kevin, go ahead.
As far as the metrics, you'd really have to kind of dig into almost the industry by industry statistics. The job growth has been pretty broad. That being said, it's been strongest in the leisure and hospitality area. I think different reasons for that, just because that area in particular got hammered so badly with COVID. But in terms of the quality of the job, again, you'd really kind of have to look at industry by industry to kind of gauge, say, if there's a particular industry that you want to be employed in, how's it going? How is it doing? But for the most part, like I said, the job gains have been pretty broad. But that being said, they still have been the strongest in your leisure and hospitality area.
Marcus, thanks for the call. And Kevin, I don't remember exactly, but the monthly report does look at wages, and looks like those have gone up, I think, now slightly faster than inflation. So not like huge jumps in wages, but on par anyway.
Yeah, for earnings growth, it's actually 4.2% increase over the last 12 months. And the Atlanta Federal Reserve has actually a measure that I kind of like to take a look at, because they use a 3-month moving average. So it kind of smooths out any sort of ups and downs that might be a little bit temporary. And they had wage growth of 5.3%. That's a 3-month average. And in August, that's been going down since August 2022. There's a good part to that, in that the Federal Reserve really watches the labor market, and they don't want wages to if wages were to continually accelerate at a greater pace, then you'd probably see future increases in interest rates. But wages have gone up greater than the rate of inflation anyway. Again, not for everybody, but this is your median wage increase. So real wages on balance have gone up in 2023 compared to 2022 when they didn't. So wages are up, but the rate of increase has been going down.
Go back to our callers now. Bruce is with us in Cumberland. Bruce, hello.
I'm curious as to how this plays out, because when gas prices go up, all prices of everything goes up, and that's clear for transport being more expensive. However, when the gas prices go back down, the prices of things do not fluctuate with gas prices, and those monies are not being or must not be applied to better benefits or better pay for people. Where does this money go, and how exactly is that crunching the job economy?
Thanks for the call, Bruce. Kevin.
Well, again, I'll kind of go back to what I said back in 2022. I mean, it was a tough year for a lot of consumers because, yes, inflation was peaked at 9% back in the summer last year. But corporate profits were at record levels. And again, those profit margins were at record levels. So he brings up a great point. Prices go up a lot easier than what they come down. So you don't get the same sort of flexibility going up and coming down. Once the prices are up, you got to look back a long ways in the American economy before you see any price deflation. You can see decreases in inflation, but to actually have prices going down, that hasn't happened in a long, long time. So typically, it can impact corporate profitability.
Thanks for the call, Bruce. And just our last half a minute, Kevin, the worry, of course, is, hey, are we headed for a recession anytime soon? Quick take on what to watch for to see if that's happening.
Two things. I think for the most part, the expectation of a recession has certainly waned. The Federal Reserve does not expect a recession. According to there's a thing called a CME Fed Watch, there's an 88% chance that the Federal Reserve will not change interest rates. And I'll just throw out one more wild card. Watch the Middle East, and hopefully there's no expansion of a war over there, because that would always be a wild card on potentially energy prices and the economy.
Kevin, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you very much, Rob. Thanks for having me back.
That's Kevin Barr, Professor Emeritus and Chief Analyst at the Century School of Business and Economics at UW-Stevens Point. He helped us break down the unexpectedly strong job numbers that came out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics last week, what it all means for the economy in the near future. Heads, you win. Tails, you lose. When you need a random result to choose between two options, nothing beats a coin toss, right? There are two options, heads or tails, 50-50 chances, right? Well, not exactly. Researchers at the University of Amsterdam put it to the test with results published in a preprint journal. No peer review on this yet. They report that they had volunteers do over 350,000 coin flips using coins from 46 different currencies, took video of the results, tabulated them. They found that one side of the coin came up 51% of the time, the other side 49%. Which side was slightly more likely? If you guessed heads, you're wrong. If you guessed tails, also wrong. No, it's the side that's facing up when the coin is flipped. It comes up slightly more often than the downside. Now, please don't use this for evil to scam people in a series of thousands of coin flips, because A, it's unethical. B, it's a really boring game to play for a long time. Heads up, this is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, there's a secret side of Wisconsin, a whole smorgasbord of places to see, stuff to do, things to eat and experience that maybe, even if you've been living here or visiting for a really long time, you just haven't come across or heard of before. Our next guest shares some of those unique discoveries in their new book, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What is a well-kept secret in your neck of the woods? Maybe a business that the locals know about, a restaurant, cultural location, place where something weird happened once. Is there something you take out-of-towners to all the time? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tom Manis and Christy Flick Manis are freelance travel writers based in Eau Claire. They run the website smalltownplussize.com. Their new book is called Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. Christy and Tom, thanks a lot for coming up to the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Now, you're travel writers. You do stuff around the world. But In your own backyard here in Wisconsin, you like to seek out cool and wonderful stuff. Christy, let's start with you. Could you talk about the philosophy, the kind of things you're trying to find?
We just look for stuff you don't find on Google search. We like to get out. We don't like to warm a couch. We like to be on the go all the time. And we're always just looking for unique things.
And Tom, it occurs to me reading your book that, you know, a lot of times when I travel, yeah, I'll do the big tourist site that you got to go. The things I remember are the little stuff that I hadn't heard of before I got there. Is that what you find in Wisconsin and around the world?
Oh, exactly. Usually what we found is that the things we look forward to, we often get disappointed with. But it's those things that we unexpectedly find on back roads, two-lane highways, no matter where we're at in the world, that we talk about forever, and those make the best memories.
What is your secret, Christy, to finding these things? Because the key here is there's stuff that not everybody knows about. They don't come out upon that web search.
I think just talking to locals, just finding things that are unique that nobody really knows about.
Tom, how do you strike up that conversation?
You just ask.
Well, do you say, hey, I'm a travel writer, and, or you just like, you're at a restaurant and you just start talking?
Oh, we just start talking. I mean, we'll, you know, start talking to someone and say, hey, what's there something unique, something fun to do that maybe not everybody knows about in your area?
And listen to people. Go to the local grocery store and just listen to what people are talking about. That we're famous for that all over the world. We always hit the local grocery store and just chit chat with people.
Now, with the book now, Secret Wisconsin, Christy, was the problem, okay, how are we going to find enough stuff to fill the book? Or was the problem, we've got so much stuff we could get into the book, how do we narrow it down?
It was hard to narrow down. We had way more than we could have ever used, and we had to narrow it down to 84 items. And that was really hard. So already we're thinking, oh, we're going to have to make another one.
A sequel?
Yes.
Excellent. Why 84? That's a pretty specific number.
That is what our publisher gave us.
That seems random. Okay, but cool.
It is random.
It is.
We are talking about the new book, Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. Tom Manis, Christy Flick Manis are here with me. They're the authors. Do you have this in your part of the state, that cool local thing? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Flip it around. When you are a traveler, do you look for these things off the beaten path? Do you talk to local people about what you should see, whether you're traveling in Wisconsin or on the other side of the planet? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us what you found. I want to give a listen. There's a little bit of overlap between your book and our show. We are kindred spirits, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What the first thing in your book actually is this sign on top of a house by Mitchell Airport there in Milwaukee. The sign says, and you can see this from a plane sometimes, welcome to Cleveland. I talked to Mark Gubin about why he did this. Here's a listen.
Oh, it was 1978, and I was up there, I think it was a Wednesday, and my secretary and I were having lunch up there, and we watched these planes come over, and I'm on the final approach for runway 19 for Mitchell Field, and their flaps were 45 degrees and the wheels were down, and it was sounded like the end of the world. And I thought, well, they can all see us here in the roof too. And my secretary said we should put a big welcome sign, welcome to Milwaukee. And I thought, well, no, why don't we put something else there, like welcome to Cleveland, because such a hard world out there. People need to smile a little bit.
That was your lead story in the book. Tom, tell us a little more about the Welcome to Cleveland sign, again, in Milwaukee.
Well, first of all, we love quirky. And so we thought this would be the first one that would really set the tone for the book. Our son is a licensed drone pilot. He does work for NASA projects and so forth in different countries around the world and also in the U.S. So the best way to get that picture was to send him, you know, or we took him with us and to send him up with this drone. So, but that is one item that when we knew immediately that had to go in the book.
That's only in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That you would see something like that. But now it's in Australia too.
Oh, somebody, yeah, that's right. Somebody's going to copy it in Perth or something like that. Yeah. Now, here's one that I hadn't heard of. I've heard of House on the Rock, right? That's too famous to be in your book. I had not heard of Rock in the house. I got to say, Rockin' House, I laughed out loud as I was reading this one. Tell us a little bit about that one, Christy.
Well, it's a house where a rock, a gigantic rock, has rolled into it. The people were living there at the time, and the people moved out and just left it. And everything is still in the house. You can walk into the house. There's a little parking lot there. It's open to the public. There's nobody there. And it's definitely worth a stop.
And this is by Fountain City, was it?
It is. It's in Fountain City.
Now, everybody be careful if you do check it out. This is, you mentioned earlier, Christy, there are, you know, animals can get in and
there
out.
There are all kinds of animals living in it. The medicine is still in the medicine cabinet. The bed is still made. Everything is identical to, nobody has touched anything.
And I'm thinking, and you mentioned this in the book, I'd be looking at where that rock came from to see if another one's going to follow it down.
Yes. Yes.
Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Heather is with us in River Falls. Heather, hello.
Good afternoon. Hi. My husband and I traveled Turkey this spring, and we went to a place on the Mediterranean. The owner of the hotel we were staying at, by the way, Turkey is extremely underrated. Go, 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 go. You mentioned this little town during the war with Greece. The entire population picked up and moved over to the Greek side. We were trying to find that. Ended up on this little teeny tiny road down to a cove where there was this island with ruins on it. We're like, well, that's really cool. So a couple of these guys in a shack smoking hookah. We asked them about the island. They said, oh, well, we'll take you out there for 500 lira, which was like, let's go.
Heather, I got you. Thanks for the call. Not great connection there, but Heather and her husband went on a back road, met some people, discovered some cool stuff that they hadn't expected. Is that something you do? Oh, it sounds like that's something you'd certainly do, Tom, when you travel.
Oh, absolutely. That's how you do it. You just get out and go. When we travel, we don't have a plan. We have no agenda. Whatever direction we feel like going at the moment, that's where we go. And that's how you find things. You just take the small roads and you, with a question of, I wonder what's back here.
We don't even really Google or look anything up before we go. We just go. And we do that wherever we are in the world. If we're going to Europe, we will just rent a car with no plan and just get our car and just take off.
Now, my worry would be, oh, I've spent all this money to get to this place, or I only have X number of days or whatever, and maybe with my sense of adventure, I end up at a shopping mall. That's not very exciting. Are you just really lucky, or do you have a sense for how to find the cool stuff?
The first thing we do is get out of the city and head to the country.
You'll find it. And, you know, there are days where you're just in beautiful scenery, beautiful, you know, country, just with landscapes. And, you know, there are times when you just come across things that are not planned, and, you know, this is the highlight of the day and could be the highlight of the trip.
We're talking to Eau Claire-based travel writers Christy Flick-Manis and Tom Manis about their new book. It's called Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guests about how to find cool stuff wherever you travel? Do you do what they do when you go someplace new, either here in the state or around the world? Do you try to find those things? Do you talk to the locals and see what they recommend you do? Do you want to highlight something in your neighborhood, in your community here in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with travel writers Tom Manis and Christy Flick-Manis from Eau Claire. Their new book is called Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a favorite local site, someplace you take people to from out of town that nobody else knows about, 800-642-1234. I want to give a listen now. Again, we talked to somebody you highlight in the book. This is Ron Berger from the Corral Bar and Riverside Grill in Durand. Now, he was doing some renovation work and found this huge 1885 circus advertisement. Here's a listen to Ron.
where I cut in is a perfectly located buffalo piece charging at me when I opened up the lath and plaster, complete with snort coming out the nostrils. So it was kind of an interesting type of thing. But, you know, that wasn't so surprising. I think, you know, because the first take was, it was just a green kind of a paper that I seen in the first place where I ended up cutting a buffalo's tail off. But it ended up being a grassy plain behind the buffalo. But it was the same color, so there wasn't no artwork on that right there when I initially pulled. But once I started pulling plaster off and lath, there, you know, it revealed a Native American riding behind the buffalo, and then the buffalo horn, the head, and all that stuff. And then on the bottom, Russell and Morgan Printing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio, on the bottom.
This one got some attention. How did you two find out, Tom, about this mural?
Well, it's only about 20 minutes from us, and I don't remember how we found out about it, but we had to see it.
Yeah.
Because it was a temporary poster that the circus workers would put up, and it was only supposed to last for 2 months. And it's 55 feet long by 9 feet tall. So how in the world did this temporary circus poster last for over 100 years? So we had to see it. And it was originally... when they put it on the wall, it's a lithograph, but when they put it on the wall, it faced the river, so the boats coming down could see it.
Oh, yeah. Cool. That's a great story. I love that one. Let's go back to our callers now. Lanny is with us in Ashland. Lanny, hello.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Good. You have a cool thing to share with us.
I got a couple cool things. I live in northern Wisconsin, way up here by Lake Superior, and there's a community called Ulu. O-U-L-U-O, and it's a Finnish community, but actually a bunch of hippies kind of moved in there. They all have farms in there, but the rock is out there on Highway 2, and it's about as big as a car, and people paint it all the time, and people always ask, say, what's Ulu? You know what I mean? It's pretty cool, you know? So a lot of people in Ulu, they say, well, you know, people in Ulu are smarter than the people in New York. They say, why is that? And they say, well, the people in Ulu know what New York is, but the people in New York don't know what Ulu is. No.
Lanny, thanks a lot for the call. You two were nodding along as he was talking about Ulu, Christy.
Yeah, we're real familiar with Ulu, and there's a glass-blowing place there that we enjoy going to.
Interesting.
And also we have some pottery and soup mugs from Barb's Jugs. I don't know if she's still in business. That was years ago. But Ulu is a cool community.
Lanny, thanks a lot for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Okay, now within my first few days of moving to Wisconsin, this is back in the early 90s, I encountered the annual cow chip throw in the Sauk City, Prairie du Sac area. This one, though, I hadn't heard about the annual cabbage chuck in Shiocton.
I hadn't heard of that either, and it just caught my eye. I heard about it and thought, well, right away I thought coleslaw. And fish fries. Coleslaw goes with fish fries, so truly it's something Wisconsin.
Sure.
And it's a festival they have every year, and they chuck cabbage.
Now, I've been to the cow chip throw, I have not signed up to throw. Did either of you try throwing the cabbage, though?
We didn't.
No.
We didn't. We are not chuckers.
I will say, cow chips, it's amazing how far people could throw them. What kind of distances were you seeing? Was it pretty impressive with the cabbage?
Some people were impressive. And I think that happened, again, was it last weekend or this weekend was the festival?
Oh, no kidding. I didn't check the dates. Yeah.
And that's also, they make sauerkraut in that town.
Right.
They're one of the biggest producers of sauerkraut.
Oh, that makes sense with the cabbage then. Now, here's one. I've never been to Don's TV and Repair Shop. There's some secrets behind this one.
That's fairly new.
Okay.
I'm thinking maybe 2 years.
Seems about 2 years, right? And when you go in, well, first of all, on the outside, it is really cool because who repairs TVs anymore? But he has the old signs out front and then the newspaper covering the windows, you know, of Don's TV Repair. But when you go in the door, there is just a little room, and it has a counter and an old 7-Up glass bottle soda machine. And so... you have to hit it right to get the right words so they'll let you in. But once you're in, though, it's all 80s.
It's, you know, we're I grew up in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I graduated in 85. So to me, this was the greatest thing ever to go back and see all the things from that era in a little restaurant that nobody knew about.
Right. So that's the secret. This is in Milwaukee, I should mention.
Yes.
It functions like an old-fashioned Prohibition-era speakeasy, right? But with a 1980s design?
Yes. Yes.
It's dark inside, and they have TVs going, and you have, you know, the old telephones and shows.
They're playing VHS tapes from the 80s on VCRs. It's such a throwback. It's a great place to take kids.
But you have to know the secret code phrase.
You do.
What do I ask for? Oh, I pulled it up in your book here. I have to ask for
ice cold 7 up.
Ice cold 7 up.
Yes.
Otherwise it's just and I shouldn't bring my broke TV there, right?
No.
Well, it'd be fun.
Yeah.
Let's go back to our callers. Margaret is with us in Minneapolis. Margaret, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you that a couple of years ago, I flew into Milwaukee to visit some friends. And on the other side of the TSA check-in area in the Milwaukee airport is a big sign that says recombobulation area. Because you have been discombobulated by TSA, and now you get recombobulated.
I love that. And I think they sell T-shirts and stuff mm-hmm. now for the recombobulation area. There's a blog and stuff, too, if I'm not mistaken. I love that, because I've never seen that in another airport. That is another weirdly unique Wisconsin thing.
Mm-hmm. It is, definitely.
Thanks a lot for sharing that one, Margaret. We are talking to Tom and Christy Flick-Manis. Their new book is Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. Well, I've got a big list. You've got a huge list in the book. I'll ask each of you to just throw me a cool one that you might recommend people check out. Let's start with you, Christy.
Friday morning fish fry.
Friday morning?
In the morning.
Fish fry.
Starting at 8 a.m. You can get your fish fry.
Where is that?
And that's in Kenosha at a bakery, Oliver's Bakery. And they've been doing this for
well over 40 years. The current owner has owned it for 40 years, and she has no idea when the tradition started,
really?
But she just carried it on.
And people line up Friday morning to get their fish fry.
Fish and shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get the fish and shrimp breakfast?
We did.
It was really good.
It's okay. Only fish and shrimp. They don't have the sides. But
but it's a bakery.
It's amazing. Yes.
It's so I could get donuts with my fish.
You could get a Persian and a fish.
Even that a Kringle. It's an old-fashioned bakery. That are going, you know, the kind that are going away. And she actually makes her own buttercream homemade there. It's a good bakery.
That sounds fantastic. Okay, now, Tom, you can volunteer one here. I know it's hard to choose from all 84.
There are so many. I would say maybe Croker Curl in Altoona. And everybody says, Croker what?
Yeah.
So it's a cross between.
Oh, yeah. I saw this in the book. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cross between curling and the Canadian board game Crokinole. So you have a sheet of ice that's about I believe it's around 45 feet and in circumference, and you have metal poles around the middle hole that you slide small curling stones into, you know, different rings for different scores, and then if you make it into the bucket, then it's 20 points. So the Altoona Parks and Recreation, they wanted something to do during COVID to get people outside and get active. And so they found this online on a Canadian, you know, Facebook chat, Facebook group, and they implemented it. And it's a lot of fun. But I would say that, I mean, there's so many, we could go forever.
Yeah, the circular curling, basically, instead of on a track.
Right, right. It's a small circumference, right.
All right, now just a minute or so left. What are your next travel plans?
Well, we're going to Iowa next week.
Okay.
See, I don't sound.
Now, some people might say, "Oh, Iowa, that's not exciting," but you're going to find something cool.
We probably will.
We just got back from Indiana about a week and a half ago.
Did you find anything cool there? I drive often through that little northwest corner to get to Michigan. I don't stop in Indiana much. What should I find there?
We actually did find some unique things. There's a place that raises pigs,
mm-hmm.
and their pigs have apartments.
Okay.
They have couches and TVs and...
toys.
Yes, pig toys. It was a little strange, but they really had apartments.
And the reason is because pigs have feelings.
That's the motto there?
Kind of, I believe.
Well, it was a sanctuary, and the pigs were adopted by people when there was that period when people wanted to have pigs as pets.
Yeah.
And so they were used to living in homes. So the sanctuary had to make homes for the pigs.
Awesome. Well, that's a great example of the kind of thing we can find. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Been talking to Christy Flick-Manis and Tom Manis from Eau Claire. They are travel writers. Their new book is called Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. You can follow their website, smalltownplussize.com. They're speaking at Rock Garden Tavern in Phillips on Saturday, October 28th. Tomorrow on Central Time, we'll look at public opinion of the U.S. military, why it's stayed high in recent years. That and more tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, news sites are seeing a major decline in web traffic referrals from social media. We'll find out what that means for news outlets and the ways we get our news online and on our phones. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.